This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
We welcome our Kings Insider from the Insiders, our main man, James Hamm, here with his fancy Hammer Kings Beat hoodie on. Hammer, we've seen some, you know, unique lineups over the course of the last couple of games for the Sacramento Kings because of all of the injuries. Is there a particular player that has stood out to you, and is there a particular player you think might get a little bit of time when the big boys get back, hopefully later this week?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question. You know, I want to see maybe a little Orlando Robinson, maybe a little Isaac Jones, but with Sabonis. You know, because I think putting him out there right now, specifically, I think in the last game, we saw Isaac Jones have like really, really rough 2-minute stretch where, you know, he turned the ball over. He tried to back three guys down and turned the ball over again. And, you know, just kind of like it showed how young he is and just as a basketball player. And, you know, young players like that, they look a lot different when they're playing alongside an all-star center. And, you know, you do want them to be able to, like, hold up on their own at some point, but this isn't that time for a guy like Isaac Jones. And it might not be that time for Orlando Robinson either. You know, he hasn't played a lot of basketball. And so I think that these guys will all look better when the talent around them raises. And that's not to disparage anybody who's playing. It's just there's a big difference between a 35-year-old six-time All-Star that's going in the Hall of Fame and a, you know, three-time All-Star center and All-NBA center, and then some of the other guys that the Kings have put out there. So, I think besides that, besides the big guys, I think everyone wants to see more Keon Ellis and see if what we saw on Monday, not that can't be replicated, but that he didn't like maybe find himself and have his check-in moment and really wake up and be part of what's going to happen here going forward.
Man, Orlando Robinson got Keon benched. There was that play on Saturday where Orlando didn't, he just got up there an hour before the game or something like that. And usually Keon with Sabonis, all the Kings, they do this thing where in transition, hey, you know, give it to Domas and run this dribble handoff, like all seamlessly, right? And Keon went to do that. Orlando went to go screen for him. Ball gets turned over. They score, whatever. Keon goes like, what are you doing? And then, oh, you're right, my bad. Next thing I knew, Mike subbed him out. Keon was out for the rest of the game. I was like, oh, damn, they just worked it out. Mike, let him work it out. But yeah,
it's tough because you're waiting for them to work it out, but at the same time, you got to win games. You know, you can't just go 0-3 over the weekend and say, hey, look, Sabonis and DeRozan and Monk aren't there. We're just going to take three losses. You took two, and, you know, one was in overtime and one was that last second play too. But still, you got to worry more about, you know, getting the win if you're Mike Brown than you do about someone getting their feelings hurt or someone having to go into the bench for a little while because they made a mistake.
Hammer, what do you think? You know, we're talking about what these lineups might look like in some of the, you know, 10th, 11th, 12th man that might get in the game. But what do you think it looks like for De'Aaron when these guys return? Now, obviously, we've seen De'Aaron play with these guys, but we saw a different version of De'Aaron Fox on Friday, on Saturday. And I guess to a certain degree, we saw that same De'Aaron Fox on Monday. How do we, I mean, does he have to transition back to a different version of De'Aaron Fox? Like, what does this look like if all three guys are back on Friday?
No, I don't think he needs to. He needs to play who he is. He needs to be who he is. And I think, again, these are moments in the season where things happen that are sort of forced into play. You know, nobody wanted to go into Saturday or Monday's game without three of your top maybe four or five players. That's not how anyone drew it up. But I think there are positives that happen from it, right? And one of the positives is that De'Aaron Fox, you know, figured out how to be one of the most dominating players in the game. And I know he's always felt that, and he's always been capable, but to go out and do it, to go out and score 60 and come back and score 49, that just shows you a different level of compete that he found in himself. And that's something he needs to bring. That's something that just because DeRozan steps on the court or Sabonis is there, it doesn't mean that you shy away from that. You know, this is one of the elite scorers in the league. You know, when you can, there's what, 450 players ish in the league throughout each season. If you're in the top eight in scoring, that means that you're beyond elite. And, you know, it means you're in the top like 2% of players. So I'm not sure why he sort of acquiesces to other people. He needs to like move away from that and really treat the rest of the season like he did the last couple of days. The other guys will get their shots. They'll get their points. Sabonis will get his assists and his rebounds. You know, DeRozan will step on the court when De'Aaron steps off and sort of take over the reins. But you still need De'Aaron to be, you know, between 25 and 30 points every night for this team to really, you know, maximize itself. And if this team wants to be a contender, the way they become a contender is, sure, they can go find another piece that gives them more talent, but the true path to being a contender is that De'Aaron Fox becomes a superstar and that Keegan Murray becomes like an all-star level player. Those are your paths to like really becoming a contender. And if they understand that, then, you know, it gives the Kings a fighting shot. But outside of that, like, man, if you keep setting your goal at, you know, we got to win 50 games. Like, what's the end game? You know, there's only a certain amount of window here, and there's only a certain amount of window, especially with DeMar DeRozan. You need these guys to realize right now, like, who they can be. And I think this was a really good couple of days to realize that, you know, what you can be is way more than what you have been. And, you know, that's a good thing.
James, I want to ask you a little bit about Keegan Murray, because, you know, I've heard, you know, a lot of people talking about, you know, his struggles. You know, I brought him up in the last couple of games, especially with these guys out. And I hear what you're saying when you say, you know, he looks tired out there or whatever. I can't have that. I can't have that from Keegan Murray. I think he's too good of a player. And there's a lot of people out there that play high minutes, that play, you know, great offense, great defense, and do all this, and they're still able to produce to a certain degree. Like what we saw in those two games on Saturday and Monday, I can't have that from Keegan Murray. He's too good of a player. And I know he's been playing high minutes. They don't have anybody, you know, to back him up or anything else like that. But, yeah, that can't happen. Those two, like I said it earlier, I don't ever want to see those two games from Keegan Murray again. He's not a scrub. He's too good to be non-existent for back-to-back games, especially when they need your scoring at least in those situations.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I don't really totally know what to make of what's happening here with him. You know, again, I think we had on Friday night, we had a podium game from Keegan. You know, he played 45 minutes. He had a double, 14 points and 10 rebounds. He was effective. And then to watch him just kind of just completely fade away in back-to-back games where, again, like this is, I think it is a reminder that he's a third-year player. It's a reminder that he's not ready to be the number two scorer on this team, or than maybe not the number three scorer on this team. But also that you're asking him to do so much. And, you know, what are you, if you're Keegan Murray, what are you supposed to do in this situation? Are you supposed to stop defending everybody at an elite level so you have something left in the tank to go play defense? And I don't think that that's going to be okay either. So I don't know what the full solution is here. I do know that as much as he looked fatigued, he looked mentally fatigued as well. And, you know, I've heard a little bit he's in his head, and he needs to figure out how to get through that and how to, you know, figure out how to step up in games where big players are missing. But I also, like, for right now, like, it's possible that Keegan just feels a lot more comfortable as, like, the fourth and fifth option on a team, and he hasn't taken that step mentally where he's ready to be a number two, number three option. And then when all of a sudden, you know, you have the second, third, and fourth leading scorer on your team just disappear for a week or two, you know, how it's not typical that you just ask a guy who doesn't average 20 something a game to step up and be something and carry, you know, it's not just a load of like one person. It's, you got to carry, you know, all of it, almost 60 points that you're missing. And whether like he just like folded under the pressure, or again, he's fatigued mentally and physically, I don't know, but I agree with you. He's got to be better in that situation, Kenny. But I'm also not going to be super hard on him when you look at the schedule and everything else that's happening with this team, and just kind of single him out, because there's a lot of players who have had really, really bad games this season and stretches of bad games, and it's not just him.
Hammer, you mentioned Keegan, you maybe not ready mentally to take that step up. Do you think he's ready physically?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. But I'm not totally sure. You know, they have tinkered with his body a lot. They, you know, he's carrying a lot more weight than he usually carries. And in a good way, you know, like he's been working out and trying to get bigger and stronger to defend fours and to play against, to go inside and to be a better rebounder and to, you know, play against big body guys. So I think maybe there is still a little bit there that he's sort of adjusting to. But, you know, again, this is a guy who realistically should shoot 40% from three for his career. Like he should be an elite 3-point shooter. We saw it as a rookie, and, like they've asked a lot more of him, and it's gotten him away from sort of the basics of who he was. But he needs to, like, those are, I guess this is the way I look at it. Like when you're an NBA player, you should be really good at the things that you're good at. Right. And you should keep adding to like some small skills along the way. But the key is to add small skills to the skill set you already have. If you're an elite 3-point shooter, you need to continue to get better and better and better and just solidify yourself as an elite 3-point shooter. And again, I like all the other things that he's been able to bring to the table. But for some reason, it's taken away from who like the core person is, and that is, you know, one of the better shooters in the league. So I'm hoping that he finds his balance and sort of like clears his head. And it's not going to happen over like a 3-day break. This is going to be something that we deal with throughout the season. We deal, you know, we're waiting to see what the finished product of Keegan Murray is, and that might not be for two seasons. It might not be for three seasons. You know, it might be when we see a different version when DeMar DeRozan is no longer a part of this team. So I'm still intrigued by him. And, you know, I still think that there's a lot of growth there, but I'm not quite sure, you know, how we juxtapose like who he is today and who he's going to be and the expectations that I think we all kind of put on him.
Well, the problem is we have expectations for this team right now. Mm-hmm. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So we're not looking necessarily towards the future. You know, we're not looking for 2-3 years down the road. We're looking for production today, this year. They've got to make the playoffs and all this. And, you know, I think he's had a good start to the season. When everybody was there, he was fine. He was fine. The issue was these past two games. And the thing that bothered me the most, I guess, isn't necessarily the point total. That's six shot attempts in that game on Saturday. I mean, I need him to lock in a little bit more than that. Like, that's pretty unacceptable.
Yeah, and I think on Monday, too, like the six fouls in 22 minutes. Mm. You know, he was just a step slow. And I think we can write off like two or three of those. It's just really bad whistles. You know, I don't think the officiating was good. I don't think it was fair, like back and forth fair. I think that the Hawks, you know, were able to like sort of grab and hold De'Aaron Fox the entire game. And the Kings got called for touch fouls like again and again. You know, and that's not to say I thought his sixth foul was a legitimate foul. Two hands in the back, guy goes up for a rebound, the guy leaps forward. It doesn't feel good, but if his hands aren't in the middle of the guy's back, he's not getting that call. And, you know, I think the foul before that, where it looked like it was a clean block on Capella, you probably should have reviewed it, but again, it was late in the game and the Kings probably needed to hold on to their timeout. So, like, look, I don't know what to make out of like six fouls in 22 minutes for a guy like that. And I didn't even feel like most of it was him defending Trey Young and getting like the cheapies. Maybe one or two of his fouls were that, but I just thought that overall he wasn't in the game. That's what it felt like. He was sort of a part of the game, apart from the game. And so that to me, that was a problem. Like, it didn't look like he was ready to shoot. Like, his rebounding numbers were bad until late. Like, he started off really poor, and then he sort of stepped up. And then the fouls, like Sakira Bagley says, he had lazy fouls. Some of those, they were like a step slow, not mentally locked in, grabbing a player as opposed to, you know, being physical the right way, just like reaching out and grabbing, whether it was like fighting through screens and stuff. I just didn't think it was his best effort.
Hammer, Casey mentioned like there's expectations for this team to win now and you know, waiting for things to like come together for them. That's not really the best look with the makeup of this roster. But with the idea of winning now continues to make the Devin Carter pick a little baffling, especially when we're watching a shooter the caliber of Dalton Knecht do what he did last night. And obviously he hasn't done anything like he did last night this season. But he has played reasonably well this year. Are you ready to say that Monty McNair missed on Dalton Knecht?
I don't know. I mean, the problem is we do need to see what Devin Carter looks like, right? And
that would be nice.
I want to be fair to
whatever
to
gets
Devin
him out
Carter.
Of street clothes. Sorry.
You know, I think it is like though you got to be fair and like say what does he look like when he gets on the court. You know, again, Devin Carter's not the one who chose to go to the Kings. The Kings chose him. And, you know, whether the Kings knew that he was injured or not, they probably should have. And they probably should have known that this was going to be the case. And so it's really tough to compare what Knecht is doing, which, you know, again, he has a blow-up game. He goes for 37 points. But even with the 37 points, what's he up to, like 11, 12 points per game at this point in the season? There are other players in that draft, two Sacramento kids that are playing extremely well that the Kings also could have taken, McCain and then Wells. Both of those guys are, you know, really at the top of the most people's list for Rookie of the Year so far. And, you know, without having anything to go off of with Devin Carter, we don't know what he's going to look like. I do have some, you know, some questions about drafting an undersized shooting guard. More of a combo guard than a pure one or a pure two. And the biggest reason I have questions about that is because Malik Monk told you he was going to resign a week before the draft. And so let's not like act like they didn't know that Malik was going to be there. And if you already have a 1-2 combo that's an elite six man that's going to be there, then what is the plan? Was it Kevin Huerter was going to be gone? Was it, do you not have faith in what Keon Ellis is? Like, there are like some questions that you have to have. And it could just be like straight up the Kings thought he was the best player available. And they looked at what he did at the college level and said, hey, this is, you know, a player that we really, really need on our team. And I've talked about this. I talked about it with Kyle earlier on the Insiders. Like, you know, there is.
And it's official.
Yeah, it was about 7 seconds.
3:18. James Hamm is frozen. James Hamm is frozen. We are all laughing. And James is infuriated.
I'm back.
He's back. He's back. That was a quick thaw out.
Yeah. To get back, like, I don't know where you guys went, but like my point is that Carter, this is a copycat league. And Carter has a lot of the tendencies of a Josh Hart. And we've seen how big of an impact player he's been for the New York Knicks, how he was for Portland. And this is the type of player that he could be at the next level. He averaged over 8 rebounds a game as a college player, as a guard, as a 6'2" guard. And so he has an elite skill, which is, you know, rebounding. He's long, he's athletic, he can play defense. You know, his 3-point numbers I'm pretty concerned with, because a 37.7% like college level shooter in his final year as a college player versus the other 2 years. You know, he decided to take on the 3-point shot and sort of progress in that area in his final year. And, you know, sort of the same way that Davion Mitchell did. And I don't know that that's sustainable. And so we'll have to see what he looks like as an NBA 3-point shooter. But I always get back to the same thing. If he's not a starter, and there were other players who could be starters there at the same position in the draft, then you got to ask yourself, like, why? You know, I always go back to, you know, when the Kings drafted Quincy Dubé, like the picks that go right after Quincy Dubé are like, not all of them worked out, but Rajon Rondo is right there. I think one of the Williams, a point guard out of, I think, UConn, there was someone who slid all the way to number 20. Josh Boone was right there, a Connecticut big man. There were guys who projected as NBA starters, and the Kings drafted Quincy Dubé, a guy who was never going to be a starter. Like, it didn't matter what happened. Quincy Dubé was drafted maybe to be like the next Bobby Jackson. But that's kind of how you look the Devin Carter. That's the question I have about the Devin Carter pick, and like, how does he project out? Where does he play long-term? How do you fit him in? Or why do you keep drafting? If you believe he's a point guard, why do you keep drafting point guards when you have De'Aaron Fox? And so, yeah, it's just kind of an interesting pick overall. And Connect seems to have been, it seems to be a guy that would fit so many of these things that, you know, that the Kings need.
Yeah, it's a head scratching pick to say the least right now, but I'm with you, Hammer. We gotta wait and see Devin, you know what I'm saying, and see what he looks like on the court, see his game on the NBA level. He could, you know, be somebody that fans fall in love with, and, you know, does all the little things that we're looking for people to do out there. So we don't know, but right now it is frustrating seeing guys like Dalton Connect, Jared McCain out there producing at a relatively high level for a rookie. And we don't know when or if we'll see Devin Carter this year.
Yeah, and I think we will see Devin, just so you know. Like, he's been really active. Like, when we show up in pregame or when you're at practice, like, he's out there shooting. He's out there, like, playing as much as he possibly can at this point. He's just not cleared for contact. He's allowed to shoot. He's allowed to do all the workouts. And so when he does get cleared for contact, you know, you could see maybe he get a game or two at the G League level if the Kings have a whole bunch of, you know, well, they'll be on the road in mid-January. Mm-hmm. So that will be one issue. But I wouldn't doubt that you see him like bounce onto the court like relatively quickly. But again, at that point, what if the Kings are playing well and they don't need him at that point? Like, how are you going to mess up your guard rotation if...
Well, how are they going to work him in, period?
Yeah.
Like, where does he fit? And I think that's something Kenny brought up earlier, which is kind of weighed into our little bit of our frustration was like, how exactly do you make this work?
No, it's a good question. Yeah.
Thank you.
And not only that, but just look at the size of the players around him, right? So De'Aaron Fox, 6'3", Malik Monk, 6'2", 6'3", Keon Ellis, like a really thin 6'4". You know, Kevin Herter is the one big guard that you have, but Jordan McLaughlin is 5'11". Like, so you don't have...
And Jordan's playing pretty well, too. Sorry, Hammer.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
He is playing pretty well.
I feel like Jordan's playing well.
Yeah, but look at, like, again, the team, it makes more sense to have a big guard. Mm-hmm. And even if, you know, that's Kevin Herter or, heaven forbid, Dalton Kinect can play the two. Like, that's one of those things that you point to. It's like, hey, you don't want to go just undersized because you know you're always going to be undersized at the five. Mm-hmm. Like, Demontis is not a 6 foot, is not a true 7 footer. And like that comes into play on occasion. You're undersized at the three with DeMar DeRozan starting. And let's be honest, you bulked up your small forward and put him at the four. So you're slightly undersized at the four as well. Although Keegan, I think, is done really well defensively at that position and at both the three and the four. But you know what I mean? You kind of need bigger players. And we keep asking for long, athletic, you know, whether they're offensive or defensive minded wings. You know, if the front office really wants to push offense, Kinect just seems like such a like almost a no-brainer at that point, because you knew he would fit in to what you're building. You know, like whether you had DeMar DeRozan or not, having that punch off the bench with the possibility of starting down the road, it just seems like it made like a really a lot of sense to draft Kinect. But then again, maybe they didn't like Kinect. Maybe there's something about him. Maybe they're, you know, just because he's working out in LA doesn't mean that he would work out everywhere. And just because he's in, you know, again, he's playing for the Lakers doesn't mean that he would be playing for the Kings right now. It doesn't mean that he would have like been able to earn a spot on the court. Except
well, he would have played these last three games
with the injuries. Yeah,
he would have played
for sure.
Yeah. He would have played. We'll come back. I don't think we solved anything.
No.
That's good. That's perfect. We solved absolutely nothing. So we'll come back and we'll look ahead. Sacramento Kings take on the Clippers on Friday. And, James, I have some thoughts on the Brooklyn game. I think that's going to be a really tough one for Sacramento as well. So we'll come back. We'll talk about that. Steelo and Casey with James Hamm of the Insiders here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. Well, James is looking for the weird LeBron James stats. I don't know what those are.
I got a homegirl, Rachel. She's in the chat, and this reminded me. We said happy birthday. There was a couple of happy birthdays on Monday.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And my son alerted me. He said, how did you not say happy birthday to Mickey Mouse on Monday? I said, I didn't know.
Well,
I didn't know.
I don't know. Happy birthday, Mickey Mouse.
And he said, me and Mickey have, he said, that's my claim to fame, that me and Mickey have the same birthday.
Well, it's his claim to fame for now until he goes plays for Deion Florida State for a record-setting $65 million NIL deal that Uncle D'Lo negotiated.
Ooh, I can't wait. You got the 2%. We already made a deal. We good.
Two and a half.
Wait a minute.
And that's still below the already below the standard rate. Like, come on, man. Come on. What are we doing? All right. Well, happy birthday to Mickey Mouse. I feel like that's something James should know. James didn't even know about the Oogie Boogie Bash. Well, I knew about the Oogie Boogie Bash.
He got to step his game up. He got to step his Disney game up.
I kind of think I'm a Disneyland guy now, Hammer.
I haven't got to go because my family usually goes in October during October break or during spring break. And I still have basketball.
I just leave.
I just leave, James.
It's kind of the great news about not having a family. You just go.
They just leave him.
Catch James and D'Lo at Disneyland next year.
That's right.
James, we could go during the off season.
I love Disneyland. I've been like a bunch of times, and we used to take the boys every year. We used to have season passes and stuff, but it's just, it's more and more difficult as they get older and they have events and things going on. And so do, you know, the wife and I.
What do you think about these next two games that the Sacramento Kings have coming up? Obviously we know Oklahoma City, who dropped one to San Antonio last night. We got them coming up on Monday. But prior to that, you've got the Clippers Friday and Brooklyn on Sunday. I'm actually thinking about that Brooklyn game quite a bit. Like, Jordy's back. That's a team with guys who can, you know, they got 6-7 guys that can score. They might not score 40, but they got, you know, 6-7 guys that can put up double-digit points. And, like, they've been playing pretty hard for Jordy, much to the chagrin of the Brooklyn Nets, apparently.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I think Jordy's doing a great job of getting buy-in. And, you know, as a young coach, that's all you can ask for. He does not have the talent to compete for, you know, a real playoff spot. Whether they make the playoffs or not, that, you know, that's neither here nor there, because the Eastern Conference is just so horrible that somebody's got to make it. But to be a real, like, playoff contender, they don't have the talent yet. But I think the Kings match up well. It just really does depend on whether they come out and sort of set their standard and play, don't play down to competition. And the reason why I think they match up well is because I think, you know, Cam Thomas is the, like, an elite scorer on their team. And I think you can throw Keegan at him. I think you can throw Keon at him. I think you can throw Fox at him and really slow him down. And if you can take him out of the game a little bit, or at least slow him down, make him inefficient, then you've got a really good chance of beating that team. But they're long, they're athletic. I just think the matchups that the Kings have are like pretty tough for Brooklyn.
You know, I think Brooklyn is, I'm with D-Lo, I think that's going to be a tough game on Sunday. On Monday, they play Oklahoma City. Did anybody catch that game, or at least highlights of that game last night against the Spurs for Oklahoma City?
I saw a good amount of it.
Did anything stand out to you? Because something stood out to me when I was just watching, just in general watching Oklahoma City.
Hmm.
I don't think so.
Mm-mm.
They are small. They had like 6'5", 6'7", 6'4", 6'3", 6'2". Like, without Chet, they got no size. Now, Isaiah Hartenstein.
But that's been the knock on them all year, no?
Well, they still had Chet and they had Hartenstein, but both of those guys are hurt. And now they have nothing. They don't barely even have a power forward, let alone a center out there. And Isaiah Hartenstein, I just saw something where he is questionable for tonight's game, I guess. So he may be back by the time they play on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
But,
of course.
You know how that goes. But, yeah, they. That's going to be a problem for them. They didn't even play Wimby last night, and they got beat up in the paint.
Yeah, they're still the number one team in defensive rating. You know, they're physical. While they don't have height, they do have, you know, like Lou Dort plays way bigger than his 6'4" height. And I just think they've got a bunch of 6'6" to 6'8", like, physical defensive guys, and they do make it tough. Will they have trouble with Sabonis? Maybe. But Sabonis has, you know, been pretty turnover prone leading up to his break right now. And it's usually because smaller guys have been giving him fits, like helping out. And so I'm kind of intrigued to see how that all plays out. But yeah, that's, you know, I think Friday's game is as big as any. And then you got to figure out ways to roll through this part of the schedule before you head out on the road again.
Have you ever asked a player, maybe Domas or anyone, about stretches where they've turned the ball over a lot? Like, I mean, some guys, they miss free throws, some guys can't hit shots, but have you ever asked a guy like, hey, you're having a stretch here where you're turning the ball over a lot. Has something happened defensively? Is that in your head? Like, what's causing that? Have you ever asked anyone that?
You know, I have in the past, but I don't know that I've asked Domas specifically. It's very possible. Between him and Fox, I know I asked Fox about the turnovers the other day when he turned the ball over 7 times, and I asked him if his pinky was a problem with all the turnovers, and then he went out and didn't turn the ball over. I think he turned the ball over once in like the next 2 games in like a total of 80 minutes. So, you know, I think players do adapt. Players do not like turning the ball over, especially a guy like Fox. Sabonis doesn't either. I believe that I've asked Sabonis about the turnovers, especially I think last year he had the game where he had 9 and mm-hmm. it was like, whoa, like, you know, what was going on that caused that? And I think one of the problems with Sabonis is when he starts turning the ball over, it usually comes in bunches, right? He'll go quite a bit of time with, you know, having like 1-2 turnovers in a game. And then all of a sudden he'll have, you know, like what we saw, I think it was 22 turnovers in 4 games. And that was before the final game, which I think, again, when he got hurt, I think he had another 5 or 6 turnovers in that game. So he can be turnover prone, but it's kind of like in a weird streaky way.
Yeah. I hope the streak is over.
Yeah, me too.
The streak is over. Got to take care of the basketball. We talked a lot about, you know, Keegan and just the team in general being maybe a little fatigued. Got a nice little break here. You know, most of the week they're off. Did they get back to practicing today or tonight, or are they getting another day off before, you know, they head on down to L.A. probably tomorrow, right?
It, to be honest with you, I don't think they practiced today. I don't remember getting an email. Mm-hmm. I had somewhere to go after I got off the show. But I don't remember seeing an email, and maybe I'm just off and crazy, but they did not practice yesterday. Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to have to, they need a break, you know, and I think Mike, although he loves to practice, sometimes the best thing you can do for a team is just to let them walk away for a minute and clear their heads and come back, you know, tomorrow ready to game plan for the Clippers.
Or Malik just said, hey, we ain't coming to practice tomorrow, coach, and left.
He ain't been coming to practice anyways. So I think it's funny, like Malik and Domas and Damar were all cleared for like individual one-on-one workouts, and maybe that's all that they've been able to do. Maybe mm-hmm. they've been doing one-on-one stuff the last couple of days, just trying to get ready, just kind of get back in a flow. But I would expect at least 2 of them back on Friday, and by the weekend, I think we're getting super close to having all 3 of those guys back in the fold.
Did you lose any confidence over this team during this stretch where, you know, I think we were all looking at, was it 6 home games and 7, 6 games out of 7 at home? And, you know, you have that tough one against Minnesota, followed up with that 1-point loss against Atlanta. And now you've got a difficult Clippers game on the road, and then you're coming back which I think is a really good Brooklyn Nets team, or a really tough Brooklyn Nets team, and then of course you have Oklahoma City the next night.
Yeah, I don't think I've lost any confidence. I just know that, you know, when you have injuries early in the season, as you're trying to build a team up, you know, I think we've seen how close they are. Even if they had one of the guys, even if they had Sabonis or they had Damar or they had Malik, just one of them, how they probably could have won 2 of the last 3 that they've lost. But I don't think I've lost any confidence. I mean, look at the Western Conference. Like, everybody is, like, half the teams are 8-7, 8-6, 9-6, 8-5. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody's like grouped up together. The Kings right now are 2 losses behind the fourth place team, 3 losses behind the second place team, and 4 losses behind the first place team. And they could easily catch up without any problems here. You wish that they would have a better record, knowing that they've had, you know, some home games here over the last week and a half. But look at December. They're going to have a ton of home games. They're going to be home like most of December like they normally are. And it's just sort of, how do they recover here? How do they bounce back from, you know, some tough losses without plenty of your star power?
Yeah. Do you find it hard to kind of like engage what this team is right now because of the injuries, or do you have a pretty good idea of who they are?
No, you know, to be honest with you, like, injuries can be, I mean, they're never a good thing, right? But I think there are silver linings to injuries. And I think the first thing that I'll point to is, Trey Lyles from here on out playing 18 to 20 minutes a night. I'm super confident in what Trey Lyles is going to bring every night. Mm-hmm. I think that being forced into a starting role, being forced into playing 40 minutes a night over the last 3 or 4 games, in Sabonis's absence, mm-hmm. has really, really done wonders for him. And I think he's going to be really good from here on out. Like, he might have some moments. He might have a moment where he also just runs out of gas and needs like a couple of days or is off for a couple of days, shooting wise and stuff. But I think that you got him to check in. I think that we had like a huge moment for a young player in Keon Ellis, who looked like he was really close to losing his spot in the rotation. And, you know, like we saw him play 10 minutes on Saturday, but for him to come out on Monday and just look like the player that everyone is begging him to be, and like whatever clicked, it clicked. And we played the audio of him yesterday. I had asked him about what was it in that game specifically that like helped him, that made him confident to shoot it. And he said he keeps looking for like the better play, not just the best play. And, you know, he keeps looking for more because he's trying to be unselfish. And now he knows that the best play is sometimes for him to just let it fly. And he's going to try to do that more often. So I think, you know, by opening up this the rotation a little bit, by forcing guys like Keon to play major minutes, Trey Lyles to play major minutes, even Kevin, as, you know, Kevin Huerter has been inconsistent, but he's fighting through, you know, sort of getting back and coming back on the court and being there full time. You're forcing these guys to sort of like figure it out. And I think we've had some cool check-in moments from this team here in the last couple of days. And I think it will help the team once you get everybody healthy.
Okay. I'm just waiting for everybody to get healthy then. I didn't think that was a conversation we were going to be having 11 games into the season, 12 games into the season, but hell, I'd rather have it now than in April.
Yeah, for sure.
It might be, yeah, like if this is the bulk of our injury frustrations, man, I'll take it. Mm-hmm. I'll take it. It sucks right now, but man, if this is it, then you know maybe they do have a chance to kind of build something. And it felt like, oh, okay, maybe there's a few things going here, and then oh, there goes DeMar. Crap. All right. Inexplicably, there goes Domas, all while Malik is already out because he rolled his ankle. Maybe they do have a chance to kind of build some momentum. I just wonder, do they figure things out as other teams figure things out? Because, James, you looked at the, you know, we talked about the Western Conference. Like, there's a bunch of teams. It's like, oh, I mean, Minnesota was one of them. Minnesota needed to beat Sacramento. Like, that wasn't really a big talking point for us going into that game because we focused on the opening night game and all of that. Minnesota needed a win. And they haven't found their footing, and there's a handful of teams that haven't found their footing yet. And I think the Kings are probably one of those.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Of course, they're the third seed in the East, but that's not how it works. Yeah. So
they would have been like they basically lost their three of their top four playmakers,
mm-hmm.
And they survived, and like they didn't like thrive. But you lost in overtime and you lost by 1 point, right? So, I mean, I know the loss matters. And to go 1-2 over like the 3-game stretch without Sabonis for part of the Minnesota game, but then no DeRozan, no Monk, like the whole stretch. That's really good. Like that shows that they're growing. And I don't think there's any, like when we predict injuries or when you think, okay, like look, When Malik Monk went down, it's like, okay, they can handle it. They're better equipped to handle it this year.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you lost, you know,
The double freeze, the very rare.
When was the last time that happened?
The very rare double freeze at 3:45.
Wow.
Hammer freezes for the second time.
Yo, that's crazy.
Man, Ham's internet doesn't know how to react to this weather. His Oogie Boogie is falling down. The 12-foot jack is still standing. And Hammer's internet, this could be it. We may have lost Hammer for the day. We'll just keep James there.
Oh, like, no.
As Bryce says, buy one, get one freeze at 13:20 a.m. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Oh,
so,
man.
So, James, we'll just leave James up there. We'll just continue to ask James questions and ask why.
So I was about to ask him what he thought a Five Mic album was.
That's a great question. We should ask him that because he's probably frustrated and he's resetting everything and he's going to come back and join us for the last few minutes of the show, and I'm curious what James would say are like his favorite albums. Like James, what to you is a masterpiece of an album? So I don't know the albums. I think he's going to say something by like Tom Petty.
Okay. I was going to say the Beatles.
I'm trying to think of who I know James has gone to see.
Hasn't he mentioned
live.
Lynyrd Skynyrd before?
Has he?
I thought he had. I don't know.
If I asked you what the song everyone knows from Lynyrd Skynyrd is, would you know?
No.
Neither would I. I don't know what it is. I say, like I said, Lynyrd Skynyrd, like they have one song. Okay, he's back.
I had to go to the backup. Backup.
That's all right. That's all right. So we were actually having a when we realized you were gone, we started having a little fun and asked. So we were asked earlier about five mic albums. Five mic albums are masterpieces. Like, what would you consider in your world, James, a five mic album, a masterpiece?
Like just the best, one of the best albums ever.
Yeah.
You too, Joshua Tree.
Okay.
Well, I don't know.
Anything from Lynyrd Skynyrd?
No.
Have you seen Lynyrd Skynyrd live?
No.
Oh, okay. So you made that up.
Well, no, hasn't he mentioned Lynyrd Skynyrd before?
I don't know.
Okay, yeah, but a good portion of Lynyrd Skynyrd, like most of the band died in a helicopter accident
in
the 70s.
Didn't know that.
So there's like one member. So yeah, nice. I typically, no, but I have seen a lot of those types of bands. I don't know. Yeah.
There's no like, right or wrong answer.
No, there's not.
We're just trying to figure out. You know.
We were just killing time because we knew you were resetting the internet. And I was like, I wonder what James would say is a five mic album.
Like the Beatles Revolver.
Oh, okay, Beatles. You said the Beatles.
I know my boy James Ham.
I thought you
boy.
Might say Tom Petty or something.
No, you can't do greatest hits, right? Mm. Like Journey has multiple incredible albums, but yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I love Tom Petty.
Okay.
I do.
I mean, Thriller is a five
Tom
mic
Petty
album.
At the Greek.
Thriller is a five mic album. Do you think So Far Gone
Thriller's
is a
awesome.
Five mic album?
Wait, say that again.
Do you think So Far Gone is a five mic album? Is Damn
I have
a
no
five
idea.
Mic album?
Yeah, Damn is. No, so Far Gone is not.
Don't do that.
It's 4.25.
He actually might have about four.
He does. Who he?
Drake.
Okay. We just handing out five mics over at the Caraway Awards.
Not handing nothing out. Dang. I think he got maybe two.
He might have two. He definitely has one. He might have two. Doc got two. Doc got two
I
for
might
sure.
Have three.
Yeah, Rustalk has Pink three. Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon.
What's the third?
Pimple Butterfly.
I think you said that album was trash. I think you did.
Are you crazy?
Did he call that album trash earlier this summer?
Absolutely not.
I don't think so.
Absolutely not.
You was co-signing J. Cole when J. Cole was like, I didn't even mean it.
And he was talking a little crazy about Kendrick at
points, I didn't like it when it first came out. Like, not didn't like it, but I was like a little underwhelmed. And then you just kept listening to it. I was like, nah, this is fire.
Okay. Yeah. Look at you.
I'm just looking at, like, there's some good stuff people are putting in the chat here. I've
the
seen
Weeknd?
A lot of.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of this stuff.
Fleetwood Mac.
Yep.
All right.
I did see Stevie Nicks in concert at Golden One. I also saw.
So, okay. All right. This is going to get me in a lot of trouble. Help me with this. Stevie Nicks and Fleetwood Mac is the same thing, right?
Yeah. So Stevie Nicks is part of Fleetwood Mac.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
And isn't she a left. Hall of Famer in both?
She.
Probably.
Right? It's a she, right?
I'm surprised.
Yeah, Stevie?
Yeah. So she's in with Fleetwood Mac and she's in by herself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. I know
She's music? Incredible. In concert, she's a little odd. And like she rambles for like 8 minutes between each song and you're just like, can you just play? You know, like when Paul McCartney was at Golden One to open it, he told great Beatles stories, but then he got right back into the music. But you also wanted to hear more Beatles stories with Stevie Nicks. She can get a little rambly and out there.
The Paul McCartney banner in the rafters of the Golden One Center.
Yeah. Was it two shows that sold out to open the Golden One or was it just one?
No, it was two.
Yeah.
At least
four people who weren't used to the upper deck were.
Oh, man, there should be a banner for those people. the first people to take that trip up to the upper deck of the Golden One Center for that concert.
Yeah.
And then I only laughed because nobody got hurt, because they just took a couple tumbles down a couple rows. It's like, oh no.
Look like Mankind in that halftime heat match, just rolling down the stairs.
That's right.
Did you see something that happened to somebody at the Bears-Packers game?
I did.
Were they all bundled up, though? At least they were okay.
And he wasn't really bundled up. He saw a little crack. like, oh, man, come on, buddy.
That's not good. I just assume that everyone going to a Packers game looks like the little brother from Christmas Story, like where he can't even move his arms and legs.
Trista said it was actually kind of warm out there.
Yeah, she was out there in the tank top.
Yeah. Oh,
and she was in Chicago, so she said it was warm in Chicago.
I don't believe them.
Warm-ish.
Do you think there's been any clarity for Monty about the trade market and like, okay, I think I'm starting to get a feel for what we need to do with this roster, or have the injuries kind of just, yeah, that's not going to happen. We've got a long way to go before we get there.
No, because I think everybody sees the same exact thing they saw before the season started, before last season started, before the season before that ended. They just need that one more 6'8", 6'9" guy that can play defense and shoot a three. Mm. Now, saying that, I also look at the standings in both the East and the West, and I don't know who's going to be a trade partner yet, because I know like Philadelphia is 2-11, and they probably think that they're a mid-tier playoff team in the East still. And look at all the teams that still think that they have an opportunity, and look at all the teams in the West who are all fighting it out in the middle. Like, I don't know that anyone is a seller yet, which is a problem.
The Nets are.
If you're a buyer.
The Nets, told people. We're open.
Is it still? Does Sean Marks still have a job? Is Sean Marks is the GM, right? Yeah. Sean, hey, let's roll out the red carpet for Sean. Like, hey, this.
He didn't tell the people.
Work a deal at 3:30 on Sunday.
That's what I'm saying. He already said. Everybody's available. Okay, Sean,
yeah,
it's
I think it's interesting. Sean Hyken up in Portland, he just wrote a piece on Time Lord Robert Williams and whether you have to look at him as a part of your future or not, because he's playing really well out of nowhere and you're seeing the value and he's still young, but the injury history, like, do you bail on it now? Do you try to get some value from it? I think there's a lot of teams that are out there looking at players like this and like not knowing if they're buyers or sellers.
All right. Well, we only have 2 months before the trade deadline. 3 months before the trade deadline.
But December 15th.
Oh, boy. You know that's a month away. It's like I'm not doing this again. We fell for this crap last year. Oh, December 15th, the start of free agency or the start of the trade market. Not doing it.
We keep pulling you back in.
Not going to fall for the banana in the tailpipe.
Can't do it.
That's right.
Absolutely not. What I will do, though, is go to trainwithmap.fit/ESPN1320. You can head over there right now as well. You can book your free nutritionist consultation. Use the free macro calculator. You can even click the link to maptrition.com to grab all of your supplements. Don't wait for the new year to start taking your health and fitness seriously. Start right now. Go to trainwithmap.fit/ESPN1320 and make sure you are locked in here tomorrow beginning at 10 a.m. with James Hamm and Kyle Mattson of the Insiders here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
Vamos, nobody.